It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening. I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. I gotta tell you, we have had so many calls from last week's show. Randy Backman, and I'm pronouncing that properly, Backman, not Bachman, from Backman Turner Overdrive, the Canadian pronunciation, and the Guess Who, just hit it out of the park. So if you haven't heard the podcast, check out kbc.com or gervieslaw.com. You gotta listen to a guy who has so much energy, unbelievable energy, and tells you some amazing things about his career in music. And he did it the right way, without a lot of drugs and without bad behavior. He is just into his music. Listen to the show. You'll love it. And speaking of someone who is passionate, an advocate, someone who has impacted so many people's lives, I'm talking about our first guest today. And I will tell you something. When you're judging character, you should always first look at how someone has impacted other people's lives. And our guest, who we're going to talk to in a minute, has had such an important impact on so many people in all walks of life, lives. And that's something he should definitely be proud of. You know, when I come in here in the studio to introduce a guest, I usually, you know, do some research, of course, to make sure I don't miss anything, because you gotta know this guy. You gotta know our guests. And I looked at his Instagram account, and he self-described himself perfectly. He says he's a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, very important to him, Navy and Marine Corps veteran. He's a TV host. By the way, I'm a TV host. MS warrior, another thing impacting people's lives. Stroke survivor, cannabis activist, and a passionate snowboarder. I'll tell you something. The Montel Williams Show ran, and listen to this, in syndication from 1991 to 2008. That means that everyone knows who Montel Williams is. And he was very successful in that show, winning a daytime Emmy for Outstanding Talk Show Host, and the show was nominated a couple times for Outstanding Talk Show in 2001 and 2002. He served in both the U.S. Marine Corps and the U.S. Navy, retired after 22 years, and has been an outspoken advocate for military veterans since. He was the first Black Marine in officer training program at the U.S. Naval Academy. Now he has hosted the Military Makeover for some time since 2015. Operation Career, and that's on Lifetime. And the new season just started. If you didn't see the first show, check it out. You can see the makeover doing great things for military folks. He's been an actor, All My Children. He had a Perry Mason movie, The Case of the Telltale Talk Show Host. People always say, how is Montel Williams on a legal show? Well, there's a lot of connections. He was on the show JAG, there you go, Touched by an Angel, and he played a judge on All My Children, so that's pretty cool. And now, the new film that just came out, When George Got Murdered, he stars in that film, and we are fortunate enough later in the show to have director and writer Terrence Tykeem on to talk about When George Got Murdered, so you can look forward to that. And without further ado, and there's lots more to talk about with Montel. Montel, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Well, thanks so much for having me, sir.
I am, and first of all, you know, it's an honor, and, you know, no one's ever called me sir, so I know with your military background, I'm going to take it. Anytime someone can show that kind of respect, I accept it. But I got to tell you, when I talk about someone who has had an impact on so many people's lives, and in so many different ways, when you sit back and think about it, what do you feel most proud of throughout this long career in the public?
I got to tell you, I've excuse me, I literally, I think I'm most proud of the fact that I literally have done this and done it my way. You know, I refuse to ever live up to or down to anybody else's expectations. I live up to my own. And having been afforded an opportunity to have a show like a daytime talk show and then to go on to do shows like the ones I'm doing right now, and you, in the introduction you talked about, I do a show, it's called Military Makeover, where we make over deserving veteran families' homes from the ground up. And I also do another show that is called Military Makeover Operation Career. So that's a second show. And then I also host a show that's called The Balancing Act, all of which were on Lifetime. But I've literally gotten, had an opportunity to pick the things that I want to work on and then also try to hone those and make those into a reflection of me and kind of do it in my own way. So,
you know,
I've often said that, you know, the most important thing in life is to own the definition of who you are. And I think I've been able to do that.
You certainly have, and you shared it. And I, you know, I get a glass of water or something. This is, I don't want you to get choked up. You're the toughest dude around, and, you know, we need you to feel good about this here. Do you need a glass of water? Are you okay?
I'm good. I'm good to go.
All right. If you need, take a break. I'm good. I can talk about all your accomplishments while you're making sure your voice is as wonderful as it has been through all of your public appearances. But not only your voice on TV and in the media, but you've written as well. You're best-selling author, sharing a lot of your motivation. You've had no problem being motivated, living well, climbing higher. Practical Parenting, just a few examples of some of the books that you've written that people love and get motivated by. How does it feel when you put your thoughts and words on paper and people turn to you and say, wow, that really helped me?
That was, you know, I can remember I did my books several years back, but, you know, I also kind of went on book tours for each one of them. And, you know, it was just so moved by the numbers of people who would show up at places. I remember we were in Philadelphia, and I probably had about 1,200 people standing in line to get an autograph. And all of them, you know, bought the books that I had had out before that, but also the most recent one that had come out. And, you know, it clearly helped people. You know, I don't believe that I am the reason why anybody gets up and do what they're going to do. But I think that I can just give you a spark to make you recognize that if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Well, the other thing is there are people who unfortunately have afflictions and they turn to you. For instance, MS, you have been diagnosed with it in 1999 and you've taken a negative and really turned it into a positive. I love the stories you tell about snowboarding and how challenging that can be and how you make sure this is going to help you and others see it. And I saw a video of you. You were shredding it, man. I mean, I can't believe it. You can move while with that snowboard.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that I was never a snow person in my entire life until I was diagnosed with MS and realized that I had a really serious affliction to heat. I can't take it outside in the heat if it's above like 86 degrees. And as it gets into the 90s and higher, it's like kryptonite for me. And so when I was first diagnosed, I found myself staying inside a lot. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I got to get out. So let me find some place that it's cold. So I literally, for the first 6 years of my diagnosis, I flew to South America almost every summer, spent the entire summer down there because it's wintertime there. And then I would fly back when it would start to cool down in North America. Only because, you know, and then when I was in the cold, I said, well, I got to figure out something to do. I didn't feel like skiing because I had some weakness in one of my legs, and I didn't think that you know, being on two separate things was going to do me any good. So I said, you got to try snowboarding. And when I really got to it, it literally became almost like my own rehab. I focused on the fact that I had some real serious left leg weakness, and if I train my leg and then I utilize the leg appropriately on a snowboard, it would balance the two of them out. And it certainly did. And so I got in several years of snowboarding. The last couple of years now, because of COVID things, I haven't gone as much, but I'm going to start going again this year to get it back.
When you start snowboarding at the age that you did, it's not that easy. I mean, you see little kids who are 8 and 9 years old and they pick it up fairly quickly. But, you know, I think it's something when you have put your mind to something that it works for you. Just like when you talk about MS and you talk about cannabis, how that's helped you. And you've been an advocate to try to get other people to be helped by things that have been important in your treatment and just focusing on being a better person and a stronger person.
Well, I got to tell you, when I go way back, I should have been diagnosed with MS in 1980 when I graduated from the United States Naval Academy, but I wasn't. And my diagnosis was misdiagnosed over and over again for 20 years while I was in the military.
Wow.
When I got out, I started getting some really strange symptoms. And when I finally got diagnosed, which was really officially 2000, doctors did what they were doing back then, was that they put me on a course of, you know, opioids that, you know, though the names were different, the devil was still the same.
Yeah.
So I mean, I literally chased opioids all over this country. So I had a doctor who told me that, you know what, I'm not going to write any more prescriptions for you because I know what you're doing. Your doctor's shopping. And number two, you're taking too much. And I was taking too much to the point that I literally, you know, I could have been a statistic that we see even in recent days. But when his doctor said, I'm not going to write you a prescription for this, but I heard about the stuff, and I'm not going to say that I've recommended this to you, but I heard that marijuana in some ways does some things for some people with your affliction, with MS. It helps some people. You ought to think about trying it. And there's a particular type of it. This guy told me this back in 2001.
Wow.
So there's a particular type of this that, I don't know, CBC, something like that. I don't know what it is. You look it up. You're smart enough to figure this out. So I went, I looked it up and did some research, and I realized that, you know, as far back as 2002 and then really 1998, our federal government, who had already funded research for, at that point in time, 15 years in Israel, filed itself a patent and gave itself the patent for cannabis in 2002. And in filing that patent, they wrote in the abstract, and any of your guests or any of the people who are listening and tuned in, all you have to do is look up U.S. Patent 6630507 and read the abstract. You will see when we talk about how we get lied to as the American public, you will see the federal government has lied straight through their teeth about cannabis, because back in 2002, when you read the abstract, they talk about why the government should give them the patent, because they recognize the efficaciousness of marijuana as a analgesic, as an anti-inflammatory, as a neuroprotectant. They talk about that. Look it up, 6630507.
Yeah.
And look for what's called the abstract. Read it yourself. Those who are listening, you know, when I realized that back in 2002,
you know,
I started facing the same cannabis that our government supports.
You sound like a lawyer, because that's exactly what a lawyer needs to do. When you uncover the evidence, when you uncover the facts, sometimes you're shocked. And, you know, what you're doing is telling the public that, you know, you can't believe everything that you may hear. We're going to talk more to Montel Williams. It's great. He is the guest. I'm the interviewer for a change, because he's used to spending his time talking to people and asking them questions. We get to ask Montel questions. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on AM 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're hearing some talk right now, some straight talk from Montel Williams. Never afraid to tell the truth. And coming up in the second half hour, We're going to bring Terrence Taikema on the line, who is the director of a very important movie, film, When George Got Murdered. Don't miss that, because it's a film that everyone should see, and especially the youth. Everyone needs to see it. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. Montel, I got to ask you something. You've characterized yourself as an information junkie. And as such, you have a little credibility when you talk about these issues, like the cannabis issue, like the military, a lot of the other causes that you've been involved with. You said something that I think is very important. You said 85% of the nation are so narcissistic. I can't even say that. Easy to write. They're narcissists, that they don't care. Bingo. Why are there so many narcissists in this country and they don't care? What happened to us?
We've created this. You know, I unfortunately have to take some of the blame for what we have here today. When we turn that camera around in a way to give everybody an opportunity to think that every aspect of their life is so important that it should be televised. This is before we had the internet. This is before you had cell phones and people were doing selfies and doing selfie videos and then TikTok and all this other TikTok or whatever they want to call it, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Back then, we brought into your living room, at one point in time, there was well over 91 talk shows came and went. I think it was around 100 of them. Uh-huh. In from about 1991, really 1991 through 2007, we went through about 120 talk shows. Do you know that?
It's amazing.
If you look at all the people that got a show for one season, and everybody brought the biggest train wreck they could bring into your house, to the point that, you know, sometimes when you watch TV, you're watching TV because you want to make sure that there are people out there whose plight is worse than yours.
Right.
So at least you don't feel that bad.
Right.
And so there were people who then decided that their lives were more important than anybody who was being seen, because we've now had this reality kind of based TV that turned us all into focusing just on us. We forgot that we live on a planet, and, you know, I don't care what religion you are, almost every single religion has some sort of a tenet that at the end of your days, you'll be judged for what you've done for the least of us. I don't care, Catholic, Jewish, Baptist, whatever you are. Almost everybody has some sort of a tenet in their religion that deals with taking care of the poor, the homeless, and those things. And we've now turned away from that, turned away, I think, from that idea of having collective responsibility for our fellow man. And so right now, when we look at the news, we have, you know, living up to the monikers of the late 90s, every news outlet seems to run by that old saying. Remember the saying, if it bleeds, it leads?
Yeah.
So now every news broadcast starts with the bloody story.
That's right.
The shooting, the killing, the murder, the this, that, the this, that, the this, that. We have literally just beaten, I think, the American public into what we're not willing to admit. And I've been talking about this for now, not a year, not this month, not last month. I've been talking about this for the last 5 years.
I think, Montel, I think you've been talking about it more because when your show was not renewed, you talked about the media having a preference for stories about Hollywood stars over things like the military personnel and stories. So you've been talking about this a long time. Isn't that what maybe got you a little bit in trouble when your show was maybe too outspoken for the media?
You know, at some point in time, I look back and I thought, was that what was going on? Well, you know, I don't know if that was actually what happened, is that I took too much pressure from other people. I think really what happened is that I got to a point, man, when I didn't feel like doing it. I didn't feel like when my show ended, I really was not going to change the nature of what we did. I didn't want to have people throwing punches, people fighting, people screaming.
By the way, we had Jerry Springer on the show about 2 months ago, so I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, and Jerry came on and started a show after mine, but I knew Jerry way back before I even started my show, because I had gone through You know, where was he from? He was from
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, Ohio. Yeah, I literally went through Cincinnati multiple times doing some live broadcast for local television and knew him when he was running for deputy mayor.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was not ever going to go that direction. It was never going to be me. And unfortunately, television at the time that we ended up stopping, you know, was headed down that direction of women turning over tables, people spitting in people's faces. I'm not playing that game. That's not me. I'm not going to do it. And so I'm glad I left. I am now looking forward to some opportunities to launch a couple other new shows right now, which I think the country's in dire need of, because we're not having any conversations about anything meaningful. We're only having conversations about what we perceive to be the chasms that divide us.
So we only have a couple minutes before we have to take a break. Tell us a little bit, briefly, what you're looking forward to doing moving forward. We're going to talk about when George got murdered after the break. But what is Montel Williams looking forward to in the coming years?
Well, I'm literally doing a show. I'm going to do something right now, a podcast, which is called Let's Be Blunt, where we talk about all the cannabis information from around the world. And I don't do it from, you know, a stoner's perspective, though I'm not, you know, casting aspersions on anybody. But I'm about informing people. I'm about giving you the information you need to make a good decision for yourself and your family. And so my podcast has had some of the top luminaries in the world, from South Africa, from Australia, from around the world, who have been on the show, from Europe, who have talked about the real truth behind cannabis and cannabinoids. So that's one thing that I'm doing. I'm going to continue doing that.
How can people hear that show, the podcast?
Anywhere you can get your podcast, just look for Let's Be Blunt with Montel, and it's there. We've done well over 200 episodes. We have everybody from Tommy Chung to Redman to Sean Paul to Dr. Oz.
Have you had Kamala Harris on, though?
I have not had her on.
But you're an old friend of hers. She should come on your podcast.
Well, I did a radio show years ago on Air America, and I had her on the show before she became Secretary of State for California. We've not had any conversations for quite a long time. I haven't spoken to her probably in 15 years.
Oh, okay. But you're getting a lot of people on the podcast who have a lot of information to share.
Absolutely. The podcast is not well. And then right now I'm working with a production company that's trying to move together a new paradigm for not necessarily a talk show, but for a show that if it even runs in prime time, I think we'll attract a lot of eyes, because we're going to help people figure out the fact that nothing is unsolvable. You know, we can literally have a conversation and figure out how we can applaud the things that we have in common and work for a common good, rather than work at life at just staying angry. So we'll launch that next year.
That is a great concept, and I hope that that gets put together so it'll get out there, because I think that's how you're going to be addressing narcissism as well, if you can get people to understand that concept. You know, there's a lot of things you got to do to take away the prevailing attitudes of this country today. We need to take a break at the bottom of the hour. Well, go ahead, Montel. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying you got to pay those bills, my friend. Go ahead.
You know it. You know it. For 18 years, you know it. And going forward, even with the podcast, everything, it's always about paying the bills. That's balancing interest, money interest, and the information that you need to get out to the public. When we come back, we're going to talk about the film When George Got Murdered. Montel Williams is the star of that show. It's really a movie that people need to see. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on AM 790 KABC.
Yeah. That glass is always half full. Sometimes it's hard to imagine that the glass is half full. But when you take on an important project to show people and to have people understand that things have to change And there are ways to make things better. You have to be congratulated for that. We've been talking to Montel Williams for the last half hour. Now we are bringing on the line Terrence Tykeem, who is the writer and director of a very important film called When George Got Murdered. It's easy to watch. There's so many ways. I watched it, downloaded an app, and there it was. It's really impactful. I think it should be mandatory viewing for students so that they understand really the intricacies of what everyone experienced in 8 minutes and 46 seconds when we saw the Minneapolis police murdering George Floyd. And this film reimagines, and you're going to learn a little bit about what reimagines means, the aftermath of the George Floyd killing. It's set in prison where George Floyd's murderer was incarcerated, and Montel Williams plays the captain in the prison, trying to figure out how to keep peace in this prison where the murderer is. The cast is really incredible. Donnie Most, which most of you will remember from Happy Days, does an excellent job. You've seen that he's grown up since his Happy Days days. Beanie Siegel really does another wonderful job. Robert Wool, Don Marie Davis. Great cast. And at the end of the film, you see these clips of how people reacted where they were when George got murdered. And, you know, hearing people like Ron Howard, D.L. Hughley, Arnell Pineda of Journey, so many people with these heartfelt messages and what it meant to them. You really have to congratulate Terrence Tykeem for a wonderful job on this film. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Terrence.
Thanks a lot.
You know, you and Montel teamed up to do something very important. When you look back on this, the film came out a couple months ago, a lot of people watching it. Did you ever think that you would have such an impactful film on such an important subject?
Well, I made it a point to try to make it as impactful as I possibly could because it was a subject that I knew a lot of people weren't going to tackle. For whatever reason, you know, people are just running from these real life issues. And that was probably the most real life issue on steroids. So, but I knew I couldn't address it from the standpoint of trying to redo that, that murder out on the street. So there's no way in the world I was going to try to address it from that standpoint because you would need the family's consent and to try to just, you know, like I don't even know how they would do that to react.
Yeah, you'd have to come to people like me, like a lawyer, to try and figure it out. And I'll tell you, I used to work at NBC many years ago, and it ain't easy to do something like that. What you did, though, you made people think because you didn't need all those legal clearances and you didn't need to go through all the film and everything else. You made people think of what might have happened in the prison. And that's important because when you make people, it's almost like a documentary, but it isn't. Montel, tell us how you got involved with Terrence in the film.
Well, I think Terrence had been working on it for a while and reached out to our office to see if one of the actors fell out of the particular spot that I could have been in, that I was in, and Terrence reached out and said, you know, you read the script and tell me what you think. We looked at it, and I was like, you know, this is really interesting. It's a whole different – it was not what I actually expected of somebody, just like Terrence said. Nobody was willing to tackle this and to tackle this topic this way. Most people would have tried to do a linear story focusing in on the murder itself and trying to dig through that. And Terrence took it a step further and just said, wait a second. What really went on in that jail? Even if we didn't hear it, or we didn't know the truth, we knew bits and pieces of what went on there. Let's go ahead and fictionalize that and make that in a way that makes people think. And that's exactly what it does. The film makes you stop and think. Every 3 minutes while you're watching it live, your mind will go off on an argument within yourself if you have, you know, any heart whatsoever.
Yeah, no, clearly. Yeah. And, you know, Terrence, it seems like you're actually bringing people together than dividing them with this film, specifically different races, whites, blacks, whoever, because where you show the drama of what's going on in that prison, anyone, like Montel says, with a heart, is going to be on the right side of justice, on social justice. Do you realize that you are making an impact in bringing people together rather than dividing people, which is really endemic in this country?
Well, I mean, that's what I was hoping for. I was hoping to be able to bring people together and to really start the dialogue. But I also know that it's going to drive a wedge in certain type of situations. But I also just wanted to show the real life of what was happening. I mean, like, all I'm pretty much doing is being a messenger. Because me and Montel have talked about this on other interviews. We kind of missed the boat with getting this movie out so late.
Yeah.
Because people are just trying to bury that issue. They've done a great job at burying that issue. But I think this past Tuesday, either Monday or Tuesday, I just saw the news that the issue that I tackled in the film about those cops. I mean, that those guards who were permitted from working the block where Derek Chauvin was being held, they just settled a lawsuit with the Minneapolis prison system. They just gave him $1.8
million. Wow.
They just settled it.
Explain that a little more, because a lot of people, listeners, may not know the specifics, but they were prohibited from having any contact. Is that right?
Well, they prevented all the black and Hispanic guards from working the block where Derek Chauvin was being held, and they did it strictly along racial lines. And the guards, like a bunch of the guards, got together and they knew why they were doing it. So they filed a class action suit. And as of the 10th, they just settled the lawsuit for, I think it's $1.6 million. I think it was like about 10 or 12 guards, that's black and Hispanic guards, that sued the prison system, and they just settled with them as of this week.
Why do you think they put that prohibition in there? Don't you think, well, obviously, it's promoting more separation and segregation?
Not only that, but
it's also sending a message that black and Hispanic people can't uphold an oath of office, because the oath of office for a person to be a person in a cell, to be a jail guard, is that you'll protect the lives of the inmates. You know, that's one of the things that these guys all swear to. They'll protect their lives. So for you to say that these people of color can't work this block because they won't actually go along with their oath, you're basically saying that you don't trust the black and Hispanic guards, which is really, that's what really drove me to say, I'm definitely going to do this. If you want me, man, I'll make time to pull off. And Terrence, fortunately gave me a chance.
You know, it's an excellent point. We have so many lawyers, criminal defense lawyers on this show. We've had just about everyone you can think of, and they all say the same thing. They defend someone because of the Constitution, because of a person's right to have a defense. They may not like the person. In fact, they may hate the person, but they still do it. And why you are judging by color whether someone can defend the Constitution, can do their job based on color, makes absolutely no sense. And Montel, when you did this gig as the captain, did you ever think of that? Because you can see, you know, the acting is excellent, but you can see all the turmoil in your head as an actor, obviously, but putting yourself in that situation if you were a captain in that prison, and how to conduct things and keep peace.
That's the whole idea of meta acting. I mean, is to try to see if you can live through and vicariously through the script, through the person's character, creating that turmoil within yourself. And so, you know, for me, I mean, that's what really sold me on the story, is the fact that, you know, if you look at it, I tried not to play it like I was just straight up angry, or I didn't try to play it like I was, you know, being stupid. I was just trying to play it like, really, at the time that this was unfolding around that captain, it was literally unfolding inside of me. You know what I mean? So as you're watching it, you're trying to make sure that you project the fact that I didn't have the answers. I don't know the answer right this minute. The answer is, I see it in hindsight 6 months from now. Well, we have to live that moment. And living that moment just made the character come alive a little bit more for me, I think, and helped, I think, all of the other actors. We were all, everybody seemed, did a really incredible job living in the moment of that.
You know, living in the moment, those are the key words. That's what comes across. Speaking of that, I got to ask Terrence, we only have 2 minutes before we, or a minute and a half before we go to break, but let's get into briefly Derek Chauvin, who's behind the wall, behind the door, and you hear his voice, and it seems to be belligerent and angry. How did you reimagine that? Like, what were you thinking when you had Derek Chauvin's voice? What were you thinking that he would be like when, for instance, Donnie Most comes up to him to talk to him, and he's just, you know, wants nothing to do with it?
Well, I imagine him to have an attitude, but of course he's going to have an attitude. I mean, he's locked in a cell. I mean, and this is somebody who is so used to trying to put other people in cells. And so, the first thing I imagined that he would have a crazy attitude, but he would also be, you know, just humbled by the situation. Because you can tell that, you know, he's also humbled by the situation because he realized that inside that prison is just as much corruption as there is in, you know, on the streets. Yeah. And that's the point that he wanted to make. That's why people ask me, why did I give him that last word? Because I wanted him to be able to point that out to people.
That's an important point. And I think that's what a filmmaker does, trying to give everyone a voice. That's what's important. We got to go to a break. We're going to talk about where you can see When George Got Murdered after the break. So if you want to jot it down, there are a lot of different outlets to see it. And we're also going to talk about Where Were You When George Got Murdered, the segment at the end where we have a lot of people, noteworthy people, talking about the impact on themselves. I think everyone had an impact. Really important to hear. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Need a new perspective on law and life? Call Alan Gervie at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yeah, this is how Terrence Tykeem and Montel Williams do it. Bringing important issues to the public. The film is called When George Got Murdered. 65 minutes, easy to watch. In fact, the 65 minutes go by so quickly. You feel like you're, you know, 5 minutes and you're so engrossed. Terrence, you said, first of all, I want to say the music and scoring is really great too. It doesn't take over the film, but it's really a nice complement to what you're doing. So congratulations on that. I know you had a hand in that. Really, really good stuff. Mm. Now, in the part where it says, "Where were you when George got murdered?" Terrence, you say that you never felt so much rage go through your body. And people like Claudia Jordan talk about wanting revenge. There's so much anger. Did you find that some people needed this as an outlet to talk about the anger and the revenge?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, because watching that video of George being murdered, like we thought it was 8 minutes and 46 seconds, but it turned out it was 9 minutes and 30 seconds. To watch that for that long, we never seen anything like that. That's why that whole issue took over the world. So I felt like during the film, a lot of people felt just like I felt, like the anger they felt watching it was just palpable. And I really wanted to focus on that, which is why I wanted to make sure I said the way I felt. Because you only see me two times in the film. You see me the one time sitting at the when Montel sees me on the screen when I'm doing the ad for the No More Excuses campaign. And then you see me at the end of the film when I'm sitting there talking. But, yeah, I wanted to definitely give people that outlet, because that's what most of the people felt. It was just straight anger that somebody felt so emboldened to sit there and to be on that man's neck like that and to be able to just snuff the life out of that man like that. And even though he knew it was being recorded, that's the part that really blew people away.
How did you choose who these people were that would have the 1-2 minutes to talk about where they were and how they felt? You have Ron Howard, who does a great little couple minutes, D.L. Hughley. How was it that these people who do a great job were there for you to talk?
Well, Ron Howard is friends with Donnie Motz, you know, because remember, you know, Ron Howard, everybody, he's had some of the biggest films, you know, in the world. And then, you know, him, Opie on Andy Griffin. So, you know, so him and plus, you know, he was, you know, he was on Happy Days with him, you know. But so Donnie reached out to Ron Howard for us and got it. Ron Howard, in terms of Claudia, I'm good friends with Claudia. I reached out to people that I knew. Now, I asked a lot of people to send us, because if you notice, we didn't record those people. We just sent them. We said, listen, take your phone. Sit down somewhere or wherever you're at and just, you know, just send us a, just record a video and send it to us saying where you were when you first saw that video of George being murdered and how it made you feel. And that's why it was so impactful, because they, you got to remember, they sat in their homes or wherever they were and recorded those videos themselves. So we reached out to all those people, D.L. Hughley, a friend of mine knows him. We got D.L. Hughley through him. Nicole Murphy, you know, she's married to Eddie Murphy. My friend was used to do security for them, so I knew her. Sister Helen Prejohns, you know, she did Dead Man Walking with Sean Penn, and I'm really good friends with her. Arnell Pineda, the lead singer from Journey.
Yeah.
Donna Marie was able to secure him.
He's got a phenomenal voice.
yeah, for sure, for sure. He sounds just like Steve.
Yeah, he does. He does.
It's incredible. But yeah, but those we got. It's all about one thing about the industry. It's all about relationships. It's all about connections. It's all about who you know. And by me doing all of these things over the year, I've made a lot of connections and friends with people who have those connections. So we just reached out to the people and asked them to do it. And most of them, like, they didn't even hesitate. They took their phone out and said where they were when they first saw George being murdered and how it affected them.
That's just like Montel jumped in. I'm sure he felt that. Pull to do it. And Montel, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second. And I know you've been put on the spot many times. You've never been lost for words. At the end of the film, there's a sign, someone holding a sign, and it says justice for, and there's a blank, justice for blank. Mm-hmm. How would you fill in that blank?
You know, I hate to say it this way, but, you know, Eddie Murphy did a joke. And there was Eddie Murphy did a joke one time, says, you know, and justice for all, you know, the words from our Pledge of Allegiance, and justice for all. But it seems to be just us. You know, African-Americans and people of color don't make up, African-Americans make up 13% of this country. Yet we fill about 80% of the slates in prisons and in courts. Something's wrong with justice. So when you see justice for, and there's a blank, it definitely ain't us.
I couldn't have said it more better.
Yeah, I'm just stunned. I'm sitting there saying, yeah, you just basically said it all right there. Let's look at it on, try to look at it from a positive perspective. Gervie's Law is always trying to turn negatives into positives. Is there a way, and either Terrence or Montel can jump in here, that we can look forward in the future when you have a film like this that comes out? How is it going to have a bigger impact so it changes and we can say with a straight face, justice for all?
Well, let me say this. Me and Montel have already said this many times. I'm going to say it again. The window that we had for this film to make an even bigger impact, it closed when we did not get this film out during either the trial or during either the sentencing, because now they have done everything humanly possible to bury this topic. So the bottom line is that you have to be able to ride the wave of when those stories are in the media, because if not, they're going to get lost. So that's we had a major shot of this film being much more impactful than it is now, but, you know, timing just didn't allow. And we actually had it ready several times, but and even this last time we were ready with the film coming out during the beginning of those other three officers' trial, and this is the second or third time they pushed their trial back. So we couldn't keep holding the film up; we had to release it.
But don't you think that when that trial is in the news again, that the consciousness?
We're gonna relaunch it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a lot more talk and discussion. And
but you know, Alan, I really wish I could agree with you and say there's going to be a lot more discussion, but I don't think there will be. Let's remember something. Before the pandemic,
this nation was looking at and talking about something called an opioid pandemic, an opioid crisis in America.
Yeah.
And that opioid crisis back then, 5 years ago, was less than the number of people dying today. Yep. Where are the conversations about the deaths of those today? George Floyd was murdered now, what is it, 2 years ago, Terrence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
do you know that last year there probably well close to 850 to 1,000 black people were murdered by police? So it's not like this is something that's gone away, my friend.
Yeah.
I think, you know, unless we hit this and remember, our media has to accept the fact of be willing to air it. But if we don't get monster, you know, viewership and listenership to this when this next trial goes down, and it gets re-released then, you know, it'll show you that this is something that's going to get buried. And the longer it's buried, the more and more mothers cry, the more and more people are divided because they feel as if nobody's doing anything about the direct onslaught of people of color in America.
You know, Montel.
But America has a reckoning. America has a reckoning. It's coming right around the corner really quickly. You could see it every day.
You know, I'm afraid you're right. Those, you know, when you bring in the opioid example, you're right. It just somehow this country is averse to actually taking on problems and dealing with them. And that's sad. It's very sad.
Goes back to what we started with. It's narcissism.
Narcissism. You're right.
We only care about it. We only care about it if it affects us and our little fiefdom.
Directly, yeah.
Exactly.
If it doesn't affect us and our little fiefdom, we don't give a damn.
We only have another minute. I need to do my little thing here to make sure that at least people listening here will watch the film. Terrence, tell everyone how they can watch the film. I know it's not mass audience, but it's as much as I'm doing a little, just a little at a time. So tell us how we can see it.
Well, anybody can watch it right now. When you get off the phone, if you want to watch it on Amazon, it's on Amazon and Amazon Prime right now. I think the report I got, we're over 22,000 views of the film now. Which means people are watching it. But we should be at 100,000, to be honest with you. But like I said, that we missed that window for our marketing to really go to the next level. But you can see it on Amazon. I believe starting next month, it'll be on Apple TV.
Great.
And sometime in October, in late October, it'll be on Hulu. All
right.
So, and then we're going to keep licensing to other outlets.
All right. Well, congratulations. Montel Williams, Terrence Tykeem, thanks for being with us today on Gervie's Law.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care. Thanks for listening. That's it for another episode.